You're listening to More Perfect Marketing, the show for business owners and entrepreneurs always on the lookout for smart marketing ideas to keep their business moving forward. And now, here's your host, David Baer.
Well, hello, and welcome to another episode of More Perfect Marketing. It's David Baer here, and today we're going to be taking a look at this kind of oddball situation that we marketers find ourselves deep in right now. It's the first quarter. No, actually, we're in the second quarter of 2023. And there's been a lot of buzz around new technologies around artificial intelligence, which, by the way, have been around for a lot longer than most people are aware. But they have infiltrated the marketing world and many other worlds in a major, major way. Now, this type of thing happens every 15 or 20 years where there's some major thing that influences the way that we operate in business, in marketing in particular. And I wanted to dig into that because the last time something like this happened, it was just about the time that I started in the marketing industry, around 20-ish years ago, maybe a little bit earlier, when we started seeing heavy adoption of the internet. Well, I'm not the only one who started in my marketing career around that time. Today's guest, Mike Kaler, also started up his marketing career. Actually, he was doing that probably a little bit earlier than I was. And he's going to help us with some perspective on perhaps what we might be seeing in the weeks and months and years ahead, and whether it's something that we should be concerned about, excited about, or maybe a little of both. Mike, welcome.
Hey, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Now, I just put a heavy burden on you by giving you sort of all of that responsibility. I think before we dig into that, I probably should ask you a really important question. What was your Wordle score this morning?
Three. I had two a couple of days ago. I had two last Saturday. So, yeah. My goal is to get more threes than fives. You know, little goals in life.
And it keeps you mentally attuned, right? It keeps your vocabulary hopefully expanding. It's one of those things that I noticed in your bio that you put on your website. There's something that I have noticed that on a lot of websites for marketers and businesses in general, you have two directions you can go. You can be totally anonymous and not have any personality, personal connection to the people in the business, or you can do what your team and your company has done by really dimensionalizing the people who are part of the business. And that was just one little tidbit that you shared. And I wonder, what caused you to go that route?
To be honest with you, we really tried to put a stake in the ground that we were real people, because we had seen, and this is part of my long journey in the world of digital marketing, we had seen a lot of competitors whose websites were filled with stock photos of not real people, where they were trying to mask the fact that they were really like one guy at Starbucks, but on their website they had, the obligatory, 10 multicultural people around a conference table looking thoughtful. So we were like, it's pretty obvious by our name and sort of our approach and how our website is and how our brand is that, we just want to, honesty is important to us, and part of honesty is like, hey, here's who we really are. Here's the real people that you're going to talk to, and they're flesh and blood and have opinions and likes and dislikes and everything like that. And, it works for us because the stock photo people have not gone away.
Oh, totally. And I notice a lot of the stock photos that I've used from one point, I'll notice those same same models showing up on other people's websites all the time, which I find kind of funny. You mentioned the name, and maybe that's a good starting point, because it's a curious name for those of us who don't know your business. It's called Smirk New Media, and you're based in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Right. Tell me a little bit about that name.
Well, there's a long story and a short story, but the short story is that we feel like, well, the short story is I'm a smartass. The slightly longer story is that we've always felt like what we do, especially when we started doing, you know, we started in 2010 when, you know, my job mostly was explaining to people, A, what social media was, and B, that it'd be great if they would give me money to like do it. But we always felt like what we did was at this intersection of serious and ridiculous, you know, because you're having a serious conversation across the table from someone who, you know, is counting on you to help grow their business. But in the same sentence, you're talking about, you know, back then you're talking about tweets and pokes and, mm-hmm. and, you know, Instagram likes and all of these silly, you know, silly, innocuous things that people thought about social media in that first day. And sort of, so the smirk is sort of a serious face and a ridiculous face at the same time. And so that's really where the brand grew out of.
And I don't know how you could possibly have a name like that and have those stock photos and have sort of anonymity behind a business anyway. So I think you went the obvious and logical path.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, people know who I am, and it's like, you know, Oklahoma City's bit, you know, a big small town where there's not, you know, the pool of all of us who are doing this is not really big. So there's no reason to hide behind anything, you know, and we also feel like if people go to your website and click on your About Us page, it'd be nice to like have somebody's name on there, have a real person's name on there. So yeah, I mean, I think it's helped us and it really, really breaks through some of the BS that we have to deal with around our business anyway. So.
As you know, in my business, we serve marketing agency owners, marketing service providers. And that's one of the things that I think we pick up on a lot on both marketing agency websites, as well as a lot of other professional services websites, where you're actually going to be dealing with a real person on the other side of the transaction. And yet there's sort of weird anonymity or general those About Us pages might boast some very generic accomplishments or generic positioning. And so there's an opportunity to really make that connection more effectively. And obviously you've done a great job with it. Otherwise we wouldn't be focusing so much of our conversation right off the bat on this topic. I want to jump to the observation that I made at the beginning of our conversation. We're in an interesting place in time right now here in 2023. In the world that you and I exist in, we're hearing all kinds of things about both opportunity and potential problems that are going to result from all of this cool technology, both images and text-based and video-based artificial intelligence. And mm-hmm. I wonder if we can sort of get your perspective on where we are at this moment in time.
Well, I'm not hiding my head in the sand by any means. I mean, I'm fascinated by all these tools. I'm fascinated mostly by how more efficient it can make us all. But I think efficiency and creativity are two different things. And somebody who thinks that all these tools are going to solve the creativity problem still have a ways to go. And, you know, we might get there sooner or later. And I think the visual AI is a little farther along than the written AI is. But, you know, I see it as another, you know, I see it as another force that we're going to have to build our argument against. You know, just like I have to build my argument against a business hiring some 19-year-old right out of college part-time to write social posts. So, yep. So it's, you know, we're always going to have to keep on our toes that way, but just to think that this is now a push button, a solution to every marketing strategy problem that any business is going to face is really, really getting ahead of things at this point. There's a lot of flaws in what these tools do. But I think there's ways it very much helps us, but I think it's not the whole enchilada by any point.
Yeah. I referenced that this is just another, the latest wave, right? I think back to the mid 1990s, I was a marketer in the performing arts world. And we were building websites for the first time. We were using email to actually communicate with, in our case, classical music subscribers and trying to sell them tickets to upcoming concerts. And it was a new way of communicating. And I think there's a lot of sort of parallels between the adoption of the internet in the way that businesses operate, communicate, and exist, and what we're probably entering into at this point in time. And like I said earlier, you have this vantage point of having been through the adoption of the internet. You were talking back at the early part of your agency, you're having to explain the usefulness, the utility right. of social media to a potential business. Now everybody takes it for granted. Right. So I'm sort of curious to understand a little bit about how you got up and running, why you chose the digital space, and what the opportunities you saw, the hurdles you experienced, and obviously we've all overcome those initial hurdles.
Well, I won't tell my entire life story, even though, you know, the internet is a bottomless deposit of content. We'll stick to the highlights. But I spent the first part of my life in journalism. So I was, you know, I did that right out, my first job out of college. I did that for 15 years, eventually ending up at the newspaper in Oklahoma City, where I became sort of the resident guy who was figuring out what was happening on the internet. And unfortunately, for the print journalism business, I was ringing the bell and warning folks of what was coming, and when once it hit, it really hit. But really, what fascinated me from the get-go was the connections and the community that was being made online between, and this is sort of broad, very broadly, people who create content and the people who consume that content and give that attention, and that originally was sort of the writer-reader relationship. But to me, I saw, you know, this can be a brand and an audience, a loyal audience relationship. And so that's where sort of the springboard, other than the catastrophic decline of print journalism, that was my springboard into agency life, because I was talking about sort of these relationships people were having with the content that they consumed. And then we just take that storytelling model over to the brands and teach the brands how to tell their story and retain that audience loyalty and relationship. So, I mean, that was, you know, honestly, that was the biggest, I think it was the biggest seismic shift since Gutenberg, you know, the invention of social and the relationship people started having. You know, because you add real time into that too, the real time relationship, and it's unlike anything we've ever seen. And now so those were, you know, when I started my agency, those were like my missionary years, is what I tell everyone, where I was going and explaining to everyone how it was going to change their life forever. But now it's, to me, it's the sophistication of the tools now helps us in a practical way, but I still think the storytelling is lacking. The AI only knows, you know, what it's read. You know, it's like It's like if you go to, you know, if you go to the library and read every book about being an astronaut, you don't walk out of the library and as an astronaut. You walk out of the library with a bunch of knowledge of what books were written about being an astronaut. So that's sort of where the position that the AI is in now, in that it can tell you, it can outline a story, but not necessarily tell a story. And that's, I still feel like that's the value of the strategy that we, that really good marketers bring to the table, is how to tell that story.
And who knows what it's going to, you know, be able to do in a year or two from now. But at this point in time, I think what a lot of heavy users of these technologies are finding is we need to be intelligent guides to the technology in order for us to extract something that's ultimately useful for us. And the you know, you get out what you put into it is you know, a different way of saying this. I want to talk a little bit about brand and versus sort of the personality stuff that we were talking about at the beginning of our conversation, because as I look at your website, you know, you have a bunch of the clients who you have supported, and many of them are brands in the respect that they're not necessarily individuals we can associate with the businesses. And I'm curious how you see brand voice for a company that doesn't have a person or personality versus the types of businesses like yours and mine, where we are out in front being seen, and what your responsibility as a marketer is to be able to make that connection with the audience.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, brand voice is really a crucial keystone in what we do when we create a strategy for a brand. And the way we talk about it a lot is sort of, we've talked about it in the terms of, this is your invisible, your brand voice is your invisible mascot. You don't have, you know, some brands do have the luxury of having somebody in a costume outside the front door, but for brands who don't have that, their voice is what stands in place of that. Even if they're, you know, and we have some medium to large size brands, but I still feel like all of them have a point of view. You know, it's the difference between, you know, a fine dining restaurant and Subway. You know, on paper, oh, those are both brands that serve people food. Well, but you think about the vibe of each place, the customer expectation of each place, the expectation you have for the people serving you that food, all of those things are abstractly part of what a brand voice is. And so a few years ago, we were working for a restaurant ownership group that had this different spectrum of these sorts of places. It had very high end, you know, white linen, you know, the guy who comes and brushes the crumbs off your table sort of place, all the way down to sort of sports bar folks. And that was like the perfect example for us to talk about when we talk about brand voice. What this brand says is different than what this brand says, down to vocabulary, down to cultural references, down to level of sarcasm, to emoji use, to all of that. And to me, it doesn't, you know, Coke should be able to have a brand voice as much as mom and pop, one guy, like us doing the business should have a voice. And it's just a matter of figuring out all the little puzzle pieces that add up to that. And I think if you do it right, people will be able to recognize that through the content. And it's just a matter of really refining it down to, you know, even individual words is what we do. So
to tie this back to, you know, what we were talking about with regard to AI, you made a comment before we hit record, which was really about how the lack of AI's ability to engage in the personal capabilities like a tone of voice, Understanding things like empathy or being able to deliver sarcasm, etc. And I'm thinking about, as you were describing this, and knowing that you've worked with clients in the restaurant industry, I remember that there was a probably well-known in the marketing space interchange between Wendy's and somebody who was criticizing them or their claim for having fresh, never frozen beef. And you smiled when I said Wendy's. So I don't know if this is the particular one that you happen to remember, but I recall this exchange, and I then kind of spent some time looking at Wendy's and their brand voice. This was on Twitter back in, I think, 2017. I was going to say 1917. I don't remember Twitter being around back then. It was long before the Elon Musk days.
There were actual birds in 1917 that took messages from place to place.
I love that. But so it sounds like you do recall this particular exchange.
Yeah. I mean, Wendy's has really sort of, they were rarely able to corner the market on SaaS. You know, that was the voice on Twitter. And it was interesting that it existed there and it didn't really permeate to any other part of their marketing, but you knew that Wendy's was not going to suffer fools on Twitter and really push back on things. And I think that was just, you know, a brilliant decision by, you know, whoever was managing their account. I think it sort of grew organically and wasn't necessarily a strategy until it became, you know, until it became one. But yeah, I think that's where, you know, one of our clients is Sonic Drive-In, the chain. They're based in Oklahoma City, and we do all their social media customer service. They're managing that community, and that's where we hire for empathy. We're pulling in people who aren't necessarily marketers to be part of that team, but who understand customer service and sort of soft touch and everything like that. And even though we really work hard to craft those messages in brand voice, we still are very focused on making sure that people can get the feeling that there's a real person behind that. I mean, there's so many other brands that do that in an automated way, and I'm sure they're going to do that in an AI automated way. But even with that, you can tell it's just a difference. It's just a difference in sort of how stiff the words are, or how when you go into the mentions, you see that phrase, "Oh, thank you for your comment, Mike. We will be sure to contact you on DM." As opposed to what we do. And I think that's it's still artificial. The A in AI is still artificial, and you can feel that in things like customer outreach and things like that.
You bring up a really interesting point, because a moment ago when I brought up the Wendy's thing, you said it didn't really permeate the rest of the organization's marketing, or probably the way that anybody would interact with people, you know, going into one of their restaurants. Sure. And I'm going to assume that you've made conscious decisions about how you're representing Sonic, whether it's relating to the way that they are represented, you know, when somebody goes to one of their drive-ins and the person, you know, after the order is placed, comes out to deliver the food, and what sort of, you know, exchange happens there. And is there or isn't there an importance to have consistency in the way that social media or customer service is represented publicly, et cetera, from the way that you know, the personal in-person encounter happens, that you've made conscious decisions about what you're doing there. Can you talk a little bit about how you sort of go through that process?
Well, I think it's very... It was very fortunate for us and very intentional for them that Oklahoma people be doing that. You know, they have agencies all over the country doing different parts of their work, but, you know, their roots are here. you know, it's still a very Midwestern sensibility. You know, it's really, you know, we often try to tout, you know, our central time zone values and prices. I think that's where that comes from. It comes from what, like you said, what is the goal at the front line for the frontline workers? What are those expectations? And we don't want to be too highbrow or lowbrow compared to what they're getting in person. We want to be customer focused, which we don't, you know, we don't have to be clever. We don't have to be clever in that. We have to be understanding of what's going on, understanding of what data has told us about what people respond to. And, but the bottom line of that is to be responsive in a very, you know, quickly responsive, which is an important metric for us, but also respond in a way that makes sure that if those comments are critical or that's a complaint, that complaint is settled and that doesn't grow into more complaints. And that was one of the very important things that we talked to them about, is how do we talk to these people in that not only are they satisfied, but the people, the other members of the audience who are watching that exchange are also satisfied.
You know, this may be the first time on this podcast that we've had a conversation around customer service in the context of marketing and the goals of the business, right? And you've just discussed the idea of customer service happening in public. Mm-hmm. I'm curious to understand sort of, and there's a whole range of things that you're probably doing that are outside of what a business owner might think of as traditional marketing, right? Just advertising and stuff, that this being a perfect example of that, how you enter into the process with a client around making sure that what you're delivering is consistent with the way that they currently operate or wish to be operating once they've started working with you and wish to be seen publicly, and how that sort of relates to their overall business goals.
Well, I mean, it's the service we provide for them and for some other folks, we call that active response. It's a whole arm of our services that we do. And it's a real intensive onboarding that we do for them. Oftentimes, you know, the person leading that team, especially for Sonic, was working in their office. This was sort of pre-COVID when we were developing all this, but we were embedded with them. And I think, you know, that's where you really sort of have a serious conversation about company values, about how are those people trained, and then how do we turn that training into what's the digital equivalent of the customer is always right, or the digital equivalent of you know, making people walk away with a great experience that's also unique sort of to the brand. And so it's just a lot of conversations. You know, it's a lot of figuring out, I call them the DEFCON levels of concern, of, you know, we talk about accelerating, you know, how do we, you know, what's something that my team is empowered to handle, what needs to be brought to the attention of somebody on the site, you know, and all the way up the chain to how do we prevent something that could turn into a PR crisis or something larger. And that's again where we really figure out with them, you know, how do they speak with the customer, you know, gets back to language and vocabulary, and how do we then translate that, and also do it in a way that, you know, like we mentioned, with nips it in the bud. You know, we talked a lot in those initial days of how on Facebook, especially, one negative Facebook comment could spawn 10, you know, 10 dittos from people who also were mad at the brand about something. Sure. And so, you know, when you measure sentiment, which is another metric of this, you know, if you can take that one negative and turn it into a positive, it's not just a plus one, but it's really a plus 10 because all those other ones don't ever
appear. Yeah.
So I don't know if that's an answer, but it's a process that really gets nitty gritty into really language and interaction and what words are empathy words and what words are cause different reactions from people.
Well, I love the answer because I think it, for, you know, many of our listeners may open their eyes to the fact that marketing is a lot more than what most business owners think marketing is, right? It's not just throwing an ad out there, but really thinking much more deeply about the implication of an action or the implication of a lack of action. And I think which you described quite nicely there. I'm curious, if we look back at sort of the period of time that you've covered serving businesses, if you feel that your clients are now a lot more sophisticated in their understanding of how to connect with all of the technology that's available to them than they were when you started. You said, you know, you had to explain to them the sort of the utility of social channels. Mm-hmm. We all as consumers use them. And I'm curious to understand a little bit about sort of the evolution of the client sophistication that you've witnessed over the past 13 or so years.
Well, I think the biggest change has been really dispelling the fear that they had, you know, in 2010, 11, 12. There was a big fear that if I open, the objection was if I keep this door closed to the digital world, then nothing bad will ever happen. You know, it's like I don't have any pages. You know, I'm not on any platforms, so that means that people aren't going to say anything mean to me. And you know, and ripping the Band-Aid off of that was, hey, guess what? They already are. And you're making it worse by not being there to have a conversation with the people who already are talking about you. So getting people over that fear and trepidation about the boogeyman of mean customers or mean tweets or whatever, was an obstacle to overcome. And now people see the value of the platform giving them control of the conversation. Mm-hmm. And I think now, honestly, with Twitter, the fear that's coming back is the fear that that's getting out of control again, that, you know, the platforms don't have the best interest in mind of the brands that are on them. And so that's getting a little loosey-goosey now. Instead of the platform sort of really being a stopgap for the brands and giving us the tools that we need to keep things under control. And I think it's always a fear of the new, you know, when you see adoption of Instagram, adoption of TikTok and Snapchat and whatever the next thing is, it's like, am I going to go there and put the brand in a position that it could be get a bad reputation or be embarrassed? And how do we best? And that's another role that we as human marketers have that the robots can't figure out yet, is how do we give them a feeling of security that once they start putting stuff out, it will benefit them in a way that grows their business and their awareness and all that, and doesn't put them in a position to be stepping into the middle of a fire.
You raise a really interesting point, which is that over this period of time that you have been supporting businesses on all of these channels, there's been a lot of channels that have been added to the list of possible places where a business might choose to or not to, you know, put their time and money. And mm-hmm. I'm curious, as a guide, as the marketer who is advising a client, how do you determine or how have you sort of prioritized when it's appropriate to consider adding certain channels and when it's maybe not not, you know, it hasn't proven itself a valuable platform or direction to go.
To us, it's always been based on who your customer is. And that's where that's enabled us to pump the brakes on people who think that they should have a TikTok account tomorrow, because we look at the data of the demographics of the users. And if you're a financial planner who's selling Roth IRAs and, you know, and retirement plans, you don't need a TikTok, because those 15 to 25 year old females are not buying Roth IRAs right now. And so that we just say, we're really against sort of self-indulgence. Yeah. And really against sort of, you know, that's why we really don't talk about, you know, the how big your audience is or all of those vanity numbers. You know, we don't want to join a platform just because, you know, you overheard at the cocktail party that this was the next big thing or whatever. So we say, you know, is this going to grow your business? Are the people you're connecting with going to be somebody who's going to be your customer? Is this going to, you know, with Snapchat, we talked a lot about, is this going to put your content next to content that you really wouldn't want to be next to? And also it's like, there's a finite amount of time that either you have as a brand or we have as your agency of what we spend our time doing. And so, like I said, if you're a financial planner, would you rather me be spending 2 extra hours a week, you know, chasing the TikTok rabbit hole, or would you have me, or if I spent 2 more hours a week on LinkedIn connecting you with, you know, high income white collar executives, wouldn't that be a better place for me to spend my time? And it's like, you know, part of our job is to tell people not to do things. And so we're happy to do that.
Yeah, that's great. And I think it's an incredibly strategically informed answer, which is why you're obviously the founder, but more importantly, the chief strategist at Smirk New Media, and apparently not so new media, given how long some of these platforms have been around by this point. Absolutely. So before we wrap up, Mike, why don't we make sure that folks know where they can learn more about you and about Smirk?
Smirk New Media is the only Smirk New Media in the world, as far as I know. So that's all of our socials. Smirknewmedia.com is our website. We try to keep that fairly updated with trends each month, you know, a lot of our great case studies that we have, and then all about all of our services. And then and my social handles are all MKOKC. Twitter is usually where I hang out the most. And LinkedIn, I've been posting a lot on LinkedIn too. I'm really bullish on LinkedIn content lately. So MKOKC is where they can find me.
Perfect. Well, we'll make sure to include those links in the show notes as well. And yes, I am confirming that I cannot find another Smirk New Media anywhere else in the world. I thought there might have been one in Sarajevo or in Zagreb or something, but no. So
there's a smirk.com that's owned by a juggler that I've been trying to talk him out of that domain for about 15 years now. So if anybody knows the juggler that owns smirk.com, please contact me.
Well, that is a perfect final call to action. Mike Kaler, thank you so much for hanging out and for giving us your historic advantage or vantage point on where we are now, where we've been, and what it means to be strategic and intentional in supporting the clients that you work with.
Absolutely. I appreciate the opportunity to be here. It was really
indeed
great.
Indeed, folks, this has been another episode of More Perfect Marketing. If you know somebody who should listen to the conversation you've just heard, and I'm sure you do, please pass along this episode. In the meantime, my name is David Baer. We'll see you back here on another episode real soon. Bye-bye.
You have been listening to More Perfect Marketing. Now you can put what you've learned here into practice when you join the free listener community at mpmcommunity.com. That's mpmcommunity.com. When you join today, you'll receive David's collection of 26 smart marketing cheat sheets to help you master your marketing, plus additional business building training. So don't delay. Join us today at mpmcommunity.com. We can't wait to welcome you.